hopefully with the deployment of the substantive mission, we can start to make progress on the ground.
New hopes for an end to violence in Yemen. It's Friday, January 18th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, China sentences an American national to death. Are smartphones becoming too smart? And keeping the world's chocolate where it's made? It's all ahead on today's VOA Asia. A court in Dalian, China, acting with alarming speed and haste, this week retried and resentenced Canadian national Robert Schellenberg on charges of drug trafficking. The court, which had previously sentenced Mr. Schellenberg to 15 years in prison, moved within a matter of hours to rehear his case and up his sentence to death. In fact, it took less than an hour for the court to rule that Schellenberg should be executed. Human rights and civic rights activists, as well as judicial observers, are denouncing the decision as politically mandated. This given China's standoff with Canada over Ottawa's detention of Meng Wanzhou, the chief financial officer of Chinese telecom giant Huawei. Sophie Richardson is the China director for Human Rights Watch.
I think the circumstances of retrying Robert Schellenberg can't be divorced from the larger brouhaha, or I should say fit of diplomatic pique that China is expressing towards Canada. There was no indication that Mr. Schellenberg's case would have gone to retrial absent some extra effort to go out and find a case against a Canadian that could be subjected to further procedures with a harsher penalty. And so when the court in Dalian decided to retry him, I think there was rightly a lot of skepticism in the wake of the detention in Canada of a Huawei executive that this was not just political payback as opposed to fixing legal errors or oversights.
To what degree do you think the courts in China are, let's say, politically motivated or controlled?
100%. I mean, it is explicitly stated that the purpose of the judicial system in China is to serve the interests of the party, not to act independently of it. And, you know, courts at almost all levels have party committees that weigh in on decisions about what are considered sensitive issues. Now, I don't want to give the wrong impression and suggest that every single court case in China carries political interference. You know, lower level cases or garden variety crimes against ordinary Chinese citizens do proceed with a modicum of normal procedures and party interests don't weigh in. But if you looked out at the scope of people who, of, for example, senior officials who do get tried and on what charges and when, you can really see how politicized the system is.
Sophie Richardson, even given that, this seems to be an unusual escalation in an affair that has been seen as between Beijing and Ottawa, and now seems to be involving Washington.
Well, yeah, it's hard to see that this is just an ordinary legal case divorced from or somehow coincidental to this diplomatic tussle. And I think it's a classic example of how, you know, not only China will use its legal system in whatever way is politically convenient, but I think it's also sending a really terrifying message to the rest of the world to show how crass and cruel the Chinese government can be, that it would, you know, would subject this person to retrial and sentence him to death, you know, in response for being angry about the detention of a Chinese executive.
Finally, what legal recourse do you think lies before Mr. Schellenberg?
Well, he can appeal, and it's our understanding that he plans to do that. And death penalty sentences in China are all meant to be reviewed by superior courts. And it's, you know, there aren't many formal appeals beyond that. Obviously, Prime Minister Trudeau has already called for clemency in this case. But it's a very distressing example of the multiple kinds of denials of fair trial rights being held for a year before being charged, being denied access to the lawyer of your choice, not knowing all the evidence against you, you know, and then an abrupt retrial that was awfully quick. Some of the threats that people across China, foreigners and Chinese citizens themselves all face every day.
I'll let you go, but I just have to say, just as an observer looking at this, and I apologize for the adjective, but this all seems a little bit sordid.
Yeah, sordid isn't the adjective that comes leaping to mind for me, especially because I'm not particularly acquainted with all of the facts of the case or the evidence that's presented against him. We're certainly wearily familiar with all of the fair trial rights violations mm-hmm. that he has endured, you know, and which we document again and again and again against ordinary citizens in China and against human rights defenders. But I think China is doing itself extraordinary reputational harm by choosing to respond to the Huawei case in this way.
Sophie Richardson, thank you for the time.
Good to talk to you. Thanks.
Sophie Richardson is the China Director for Human Rights Watch. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. North Korea's top envoy involved in talks with the United States arrived in Beijing Thursday and is thought to be en route to Washington. An Indian court sentenced a popular spiritual guru and three of his followers to life in prison in the murder 16 years ago of a journalist. A volcano erupted on a remote island in southern Japan Thursday, but the warning level was kept below the scale requiring evacuation. And the fledgling U.S.-initiated dialogue with the Taliban has come to a halt, an insurgent spokesperson said on Monday. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com. Turning now to another ongoing conflict, this one taking hundreds of lives in Yemen. The UN Security Council has unanimously authorized the deployment of up to 75 monitors to Yemen's port city of Hodeidah as part of an international effort to maintain a critical ceasefire. VOA correspondent Margaret Bashir has more from the United Nations.
The UN mission to support the Hodeidah Agreement will initially work for 6 months. The monitors will join a small advance team headed by Dutch Major General Patrick Kamert, which deployed to the city late last month. British Ambassador Karen Pierce, whose delegation drafted the resolution, said the mission is important to the success and implementation of agreements the parties made in Stockholm last month.
Hopefully, with the deployment of the substantive mission, we can start to make progress on the ground.
The resolution authorizes the monitors to deploy quickly and oversee the ceasefire not just in Hodeidah City, but throughout the governorate, as well as verifying the party's compliance to redeploy their forces. Last month, delegations representing the government of President Abdurrabu Mansour Hadi and Houthi rebels met under UN auspices near Stockholm for a first round of talks aimed at ending the nearly four-year-long conflict. Parties agreed to the localized truce in Hodeidah, as well as redeployment of fighters to agreed locations outside the city. The localized ceasefire is an important first step to restoring peace across the war-torn country. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
And you're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, healthy forests are key to a healthy planet. But climate change is putting forests under stress. A new system aims to track the tree's vital signs. VOA's Steve Barragona has more.
The world's forests perform a critical role, soaking up planet-warming carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. But there's only so much they can do, says Antonio Brunori, head of the Sustainable Forestry Authority, PEFC Italy.
We are therefore in a historic moment for climate change because the scientific world is on alert, and it says, be careful. The ecosystem of the forests is not able anymore, as it was before, to absorb all this carbon dioxide. It has reached a point of saturation.
Forests are under increasing stress as temperatures rise. Trees are more vulnerable to pests and diseases, for example. That's bad for the climate. It's also bad for the timber industry. Forest managers need an early warning system. That's where these instruments come in. They're called tree talkers.
Tree talker is a detector, or better, a series of detectors, which transforms eco-physiological signals, such as growth, absorption of carbon dioxide, liquid flow from roots to leaves, into scientific information.
That information could reveal when a tree is under attack from insects or fungi. The tree talker sends that information to faraway forest managers, says its inventor, Riccardo Valentini, head of the Euro-Mediterranean Center on Climate Change.
The tree talker device transmits data via radio, and it can transmit data actually very long distance, up to 1 kilometer. These data transmitted via radio are transmitted to the internet, to cloud, using what is available. If it's in the middle of the forest without Wi-Fi, it can transmit through a SIM card.
The data lets forest managers take action right away to control the threat. The device also tracks the width of the tree's trunk, so managers can keep track of how much wood they're growing compared to how much they're cutting down and keep their harvests sustainable. And the data will give scientists a better understanding of exactly how climate change is affecting forests and the role they play in a healthy environment.
From water to carbon sequestration from the atmosphere, from habitats, from wildlife and biodiversity. So forests are important. Forests are made by trees. So we need to study the individuals to understand the forest.
About 300 tree talkers are being tested in Italy, China, Russia, and elsewhere. This year, Valentini expects another 1,700 devices to be tested internationally. Steve Barragona, VOA News.
Finally today, Ghana produces about 900,000 tons of coca every year. This makes it the world's second biggest exporter of the coca bean, second only to Ivory Coast. Until recently, most of that coca went straight out of Ghana. But today, local farmers want to keep it at home. VOA's Arash Arabisadi reports.
Chances are good that if you've ever had cocoa or chocolate, it came from one of the 900,000 or so cocoa farming families in Ghana. Farmers like Nicholas Narwarti say that instead of exporting their cocoa, farmers should be making their own chocolates.
We should be adding value locally to the coca. If demand increased locally, that would only help us. It would be better to produce the chocolate locally rather than exporting the beans.
Ghana is the world's second biggest cocoa exporter. But for farmers sending the raw cocoa overseas, the fruits of their labor are not as lucrative as making and selling their own chocolate.
The confectionery business has started on a humble note of approximately 2 to 5% of our output to start with. But we believe that the confectionery business or the confectionery section is the way to go. Basically, talking about value addition. So we know that that is going to grow.
Niche is Ghana's leading chocolate exporter, distributing about 60 tons of semi-processed beans each year. The company started making its own chocolates in 2017. They now make 200 tons of finished chocolate goods each year, and that number is on the rise thanks in part to government help.
Any import you bring in, that's machinery, equipment, whatever, you don't pay any tax on them. No import tax on them. Number two, you have 10 years moratorium for corporate tax.
But that really only helps large companies able to purchase machinery. The majority of Ghana's artisanal chocolate producers get zero government support and often operate in parts of the country without reliable electricity, which may for now leave small farmers still looking to export their crop outside of Ghana. Arash Arabisadi, VOA News.
I'll end the week with chocolate every time. Well, that is VOA Asia for today and for this week. Thanks so much for being with us, and we'll see you again next week.
Thank you.